These places represent some of the toughest foreign policy challenges on our agenda.
The U.S. Secretary of State singling out atrocious nations. It's Wednesday, the 14th of July, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Also coming your way, Taliban fighters continue to make gains in Afghanistan. One group of Afghans is pleading with the United States for their own safety. A new warning to the makers of one U.S. COVID vaccine. A lockdown extension in part of Australia. And your remote control may soon be outdated. It is all on today's VOA Asia. The U.S. State Department issued a supply chain business advisory related to China's Xinjiang province Tuesday, warning of potential risk related to forced labor and human rights abuses. The State Department said in a statement, given the severity and extent of these abuses, businesses and individuals that do not exit supply chains, ventures, and or investments connected to Xinjiang could run a high risk of violating U.S. law. That comes one day after Secretary of State Antony Blinken called out genocide and atrocities happening in six countries,
including Burma, Ethiopia, China, and Syria. These places represent some of the toughest foreign policy challenges on our agenda, and we'll keep working toward resolutions that reflect our commitment to human rights and democratic values. We'll use all of the tools at our disposal, including diplomacy, foreign assistance, investigations and fact-finding missions, financial tools and engagements, reports like this one, which raise awareness and allow us to generate coordinated international pressure and response in a whole-of-government approach to preventing and mitigating atrocities around the globe.
In January, Blinken affirmed that China was committing genocide and crimes against humanity against Uyghurs in the Xinjiang region. The State Department continues to restrict visas for Chinese officials believed to be responsible for detaining or abusing Muslim minorities. On Tuesday, China's foreign ministry described the report as the product of some sick people who want to give others a prescription. A spokesman said the report is just a piece of waste paper. The report slanders the Chinese government, he said, accusing it of committing genocide is the biggest lie of this century. Find out more about this story at voanews.com and our many digital platforms. These are some of the stories you'll find at voanews.com. Japan to send millions more vaccine doses to Taiwan and its Asian neighbors. Vietnam to mix doses of Pfizer, AstraZeneca, COVID-19 vaccines. China's export growth quickens as global vaccinations easing lockdowns lift demand. Myanmar's COVID crisis worsens as mistrust of junta infects health system. Japan warns of crisis over Taiwan, growing risk from U.S. and China rivalry. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and on the voanews.com website. The top U.S. general in Afghanistan stepped down from his post on Monday as Taliban fighters continue to make gains across the war-torn country. Ayaz Ghul in Islamabad, Pakistan, tells International Edition Steve Miller that the Taliban now have control of more than 200 of Afghanistan's districts.
Well, the major concern among countries that neighbor Afghanistan and regional countries is that with the withdrawal of the American and NATO forces, there's going to be some kind of a security vacuum that will be left behind by international forces. And because the conflict is still going on, this will encourage terrorist groups like affiliates of the Islamic State who are operating in the country and carrying out regular attacks. So the fear is that that security vacuum will allow them to strengthen their positions, create more bases, and ultimately target launch attacks against their respective targets in neighboring countries. And that is why we see that apparently a collective effort is in play by all the regional countries led by China, Russia, Pakistan, and Iran to really press these warring sides in Afghanistan, the Taliban and the Afghan government, to get back to the negotiating table and work out some kind of a peace arrangement so that the country does not descend again into a full-fledged civil war.
Has there been any reaction, whether within Afghanistan or throughout the region, about General Austin Scott Miller relinquishing control to the forces in Afghanistan to U.S. Central Commander Chief General Frank McKenzie on Monday, which, you know, for the most part, symbolically ends the troop pullout?
Just as we are talking, we see some Afghan diplomats are really upset at whatever is happening or has been happening over the last few days with the United States announcing that most of the troops have already left Afghanistan. And now with this symbolic ceremony, you know, it was basically marking the end of this long U.S. mission, has added really more fears among Afghans, especially the government in Afghanistan, that they will be now on their own. We know that President Biden has clearly stated that the mission in Afghanistan was to bring Al-Qaeda leader Osama bin Laden to justice, and that that mission has been achieved, and there was no nation-building commitment. So that's why this mission has to end, and it is obviously now almost it has ended.
Ayaz, over the weekend, the Taliban made the claim that they control 85% or more of the country. Now, that is a claim that is disputed by the Afghan government. But according to some reporting, it does appear as if the Taliban does control a little over 200 of the some 400 plus districts. So what can you tell us about the lens in which to view these information and data with?
Well, if you go by the reports and Taliban claims, obviously it's like nearly half of the 407 districts of Afghanistan are now under the Taliban control. And if you look at the reported estimates, most of the Afghan population is actually located in these districts. And why is it so? Because Helmand province in the south of the country is the largest in size of all the provinces. And almost 95% of that province is controlled by the Taliban. And similarly, other large provinces in the south are where Taliban control most of the districts.
In terms of the types of territory that they control, it's my understanding that they also control some swaths of border area that are now outside the purview of the Afghan government.
That's a very significant blow that they have dealt to the Afghan government, that they now control all the trade routes or border crossings with Turkmenistan, Iran, Tajikistan, and even China. There's a small border town on the Chinese border. The only border areas which they have not fully controlled or not controlling currently are those with border Pakistan, all the provinces that border Pakistan. It means that if they're controlling in and out in with Central Asian states, with Iran, that means all the revenues that Afghanistan is collecting through trade with these countries are now basically controlled by the Taliban.
Reporter Ayaz Gul in Islamabad speaking with VOA's Steve Miller. As we continue on VOA Asia, one group of people in Afghanistan fear for their lives. Stay tuned. Happening now in Asia, the Philippines Defense Minister Tuesday ordered the military to investigate a report by a U.S.-based tech firm that hundreds of Chinese vessels were dumping sewage into contested areas of the South China Sea. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We are very happy you've chosen to join us on VOA Asia. Afghan interpreters were invaluable to American troops during two decades of war. Now that U.S. forces are pulling out, Afghans who aided Americans fear for their lives. As the U.S. government processes thousands of visa applications to allow them to emigrate, VOA's Carolyn Pursuti has the exclusive story of two former interpreters who say they are in grave danger.
Haji could be here, or he could be here, or here. He moves from city to city for safety from the Taliban. For 11 years, he worked as an interpreter for U.S. Special Forces, braving firefights across Afghanistan, as he told VOA via Skype.
In local province, in Kabul, a lot of these places, Nuristan, Kunar, Nangarhar province.
Haji, the name we use to protect his identity, has U.S. awards for his shrapnel wounds and for saving the lives of two Army captains.
They saved me, I saved them, because we are teammates.
In 2010, the Taliban kidnapped Haji's 9-year-old son because of his job and asked for ransom.
They know I'm working with the American forces, and they are infidel, and you are also infidel because you are working with them and you providing all kind of help to them.
The Afghan police rescued his son a few weeks later in a gun battle with his kidnappers. He says they killed an older son a few months ago. Now Haji is trying to save his own life after cell phone threats from the Taliban.
They tell me they know my place, where I'm staying, and they were coming after me.
Haji applied for a special immigrant visa, an SIV, more than 3 years ago. The embassy told him processing is delayed. President Biden said this about interpreters like Haji.
There is a home for you in the United States, if you so choose, and we will stand with you just as you stood with us.
But the process is so complicated.
Ismail Khan came to the United States on an SIV 7 years ago. He was an interpreter alongside Haji, seen here on the right, whom he nicknamed GPS when he spoke to VOA on Skype.
He knew where to go, where what route to take, what would be the easiest, where are possible places for them to ambush us to make sure that they are alert. He tried everything to make sure that his team survive and be successful.
But Khan worries for his former colleague.
They are after him. He's going to get killed if he doesn't get out.
Those who helped the Americans often protest in Afghanistan for safe passage out. Since January, the Biden administration has approved 2,500 special visas for Afghans who assisted the military, and 1,000, like Khan, have settled in the U.S. But there are many still there, including an interpreter we will call James.
And they're about to take over.
James has been denied the special visa because he cannot provide paperwork proof of his employment.
It's really scary. It's really scary because brutal Taliban, they never forgive us.
James told VOA that fears for his safety and that of his family keep him awake at night. And like Haji, he worries what will happen after the complete withdrawal of U.S. troops on August 31st. Carolyn Presutti, VOA News.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see with links to easily find them. VOA Asia Twitter, we're always online for you.
This news from VOA Asia. Bangladesh will lift its nationwide coronavirus lockdown for the country's second biggest religious festival, according to the government. The Eid al-Adha festival will be celebrated from July 20th to July 22nd this year. All of the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. This is VOA Asia. As we have discussed earlier, Taliban attacks have significantly increased, and the group is gaining ground in some rural areas across the country. But thousands of locals in northern Afghanistan are joining the Afghan military in fighting the Taliban in that region. VOA's Abdul Basir Ilgur has more from northern Afghanistan's Jawzjan province.
Clashes between the Afghan National Security Forces and the Taliban continue around northern Afghanistan's Jawzjan province. Local authorities say the fighting is within 30 kilometers of Jawzjan's capital city of Sherbagan, which houses over half of the province's population. Local militia forces have joined the Afghan military to defend their region against the Taliban.
These Uzbeks are facing the Taliban, and our people should not worry. We will drive the enemy out of the village soon.
While the Taliban continue to press hard in rural areas, local Afghan National Army commanders in Sherbagan City say that the Taliban have taken casualties in recent days and assure the locals that they will defend the region.
The Afghan people need to know that the military will sacrifice their blood and not hand over ground to the enemy.
Meanwhile, city residents took to the streets in support of the military and say that they will take part in the fighting if the government allows it.
We will uphold the rule of law and territorial integrity, and we will stand by our soldiers and protect them.
Everyone, young and old, depends on us to defend our country. We support our brothers. We will not allow looters to loot our property.
The local government says it is working on a plan to send volunteers to the front.
We thank and support those who have united to defend Afghanistan.
The Taliban had not yet commented on the clashes in the outskirts of Sherbagan. For Abdul Basir Ilgor in Sherbagan, Afghanistan, Miguel Amaya, VOA News.
Making headlines in Asia, Myanmar's military authorities pledged on Monday to ramp up oxygen supplies to help treat COVID-19 patients as residents describe their struggle to secure supplies to save loved ones from a record-setting wave of infections. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration is adding a new warning to Johnson & Johnson's COVID-19 vaccine because of a link to a rare neurological condition. The Federal Oversight Agency issued a statement Monday saying it had received preliminary reports of 100 people who developed Guillain-Barré syndrome after receiving a single-shot vaccine. According to the FDA, Guillain-Barré syndrome occurs when the immune system damages nerve cells, causing muscle weakness and occasional paralysis. Between 3,000 and 6,000 people are diagnosed each year with the condition in the United States. The Maldives, a tiny nation of about 1,200 islands set in crystalline waters, depends on tourism. The pandemic cut that revenue in half. But with COVID on the run, the government's wooing tourists, especially those from China. VOA's Janine Paktidam reports.
Nearly half of the Maldives' 500,000-plus residents have gotten at least one dose of a COVID vaccine. And as the island nation recovers from the virus, the tourists are starting to return as well. In the first quarter of this year, 390,000 tourists arrived in the Maldives, almost a pre-pandemic number, but only 504 travelers came from China.
We haven't got them yet, so we are eagerly waiting for the Chinese tourists to come back. And when they start coming back, we are very positive that they will again become the lead source market for the Maldives.
According to a recent survey by management consultancy McKinsey, only 43% of Chinese tourists want to venture overseas these days. One stay-at-home traveler, Xiang Shifan, spoke with VOA from his home in Changzhou, China.
Problem for me is like I don't have much time. I think most Chinese, they're worried about one thing, like if you're going, you know, leaving China, you will be okay for you. But if you're coming back to China, you're from abroad. For Chinese government, they were thinking like you're dangerous, then they will just give you like 14 days in the hotel, and that's a lot of waste of money and time.
Nonetheless, the respected Pacific Asia Travel Association, or PATA, said the Chinese enthusiasm for domestic travel indicates that travelers will want to jet abroad soon.
In China, you saw there was a pent-up demand when they started slowly opening domestically. You saw hotspots or tourist spots in China being overwhelmed by visitors, by domestic visitors. So we could safely assume that when borders open for Chinese tourists and Chinese are allowed to travel abroad, there will be pent-up demand for them to travel overseas.
Hara stressed that wooing back international travelers, including those from China, will require destinations to provide clear communication about health and safety and clear guidelines on how to enter a country. The organization added that the Maldives has a geographic advantage due to its islands, which means that outbreaks can be contained quickly if they were to happen.
We look forward to welcoming the tourists and give them a longer stay for those who wish.
The Maldives are now allowing tourists to start out with a 30-day visa and extend their stay up to 90 days. This is Janine Pakdidam, VOA News, New York.
Australian government officials Tuesday announced added financial support for businesses and households as Sydney appears increasingly likely to enter a fourth week of lockdown due to coronavirus clusters. Prime Minister Scott Morrison said the Delta variant in Sydney, which is thought to be more contagious than the original virus, as well as other variants, had escalated the pandemic danger.
What I'm announcing today is an upgrading of the Commonwealth Government's national response. So it is certainly our hope and ambition that we would not see lockdowns extending like we're seeing them here in New South Wales and other states and territories. But as I said, COVID-19 will set those rules. And so what we're saying is that when situations get like this, it is in the national interest that we ensure that a lockdown that is occurring here in New South Wales will be effective. It will be effective, and that Australians living here in New South Wales and across particularly the Greater Sydney area know that the sacrifices they're making will get the job done and that we will support them through that. Help is here and help is on the way as well. That's, I think, our key message.
New South Wales State Premier Gladys Berejiklian said she would announce on Wednesday whether Sydney's population of 5 million would remain under lockdown beyond the three-week mark on Friday. New South Wales State on Tuesday recorded 89 new infections in the latest 24-hour period, including 21 who had been infected in the community. In the future, keyboards and remote controls may be replaced with a more direct way for humans to interact with machines. Hand gestures. VOA's Elizabeth Lee has more.
Typing, swiping, and even clicking may soon be obsolete. They are already being replaced by voice-activated commands.
Call Mama Work.
Calling Mama Work. Mobile.
And they can select the field.
Next up, wearing a wristband that allows you to interact with a machine with just a flick of a finger. Wearable Devices President Guy Wagner demonstrates how the wristband works by pressing his thumb to his forefinger.
When I press my fingers together, I'm drawing a line, and the amount of pressure is actually translated into the width of the line.
The Israeli company Wearable Devices developed this mudra band that senses electrical signals generated by the body. Lior Langer is the company's chief technology officer.
They actually tap into your mind. That's sort of like the magic of it.
When the sensors come in contact with the skin, they detect and translate the electrical signals from the nerves in the wrist into hand gestures through deep learning algorithms, says Wagner.
This signal is not coming from the movement. It comes from my brain. So if I move my fingers mechanically with another hand, you can see that there is no change in the signal.
From answering phones when it's inconvenient to touch a screen, to taking selfies and playing games, Wearable Devices is not the only company working on this type of technology. In 2019, the head of Facebook Reality Labs announced acquiring the company Control Labs, which developed a similar wristband for reportedly more than $500 million. The Mudra band is being used with some smartwatches. Virtual and augmented reality applications are also likely. But
not every technology is a good fit with the Mudra band.
What is certain is that the future of computing will tap into this type of technology to allow users to more directly and quickly interact with computers with just a gesture. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News.
Thank you for joining us. Our thanks to Service Chief Diane Gao and our VOA Asia team, Chris Cascayo, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, Amy Heimels, and Jim Stevenson. I'm Ira Melman. Please watch out, stay safe, and enjoy the day ahead.